Hey there, Goblin here. I just wanted to give you a heads up that until recently, I've been uploading exclusively on YouTube. So head over there and check out my channel if you're interested in more content, as there are additional videos that don't get uploaded here as podcasts. Thanks for tuning in. Now, let's get started. Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Goblin Queen, and allow me to read you a sonnet by John Keats. Blue, 'tis the life of heaven, the domain of Cynthia, the wide palace of the sun, the tent of Hesperus and all his train, the bosomer of clouds, gold, gray, and dun. Blue, 'tis the life of waters, ocean, and all its facile streams. Pools numberless may rage and foam and fret, but never can subside, if not to dark blue nativeness. Blue, gentle cousin of the forest green, married to green and all the sweetest flowers, forget-me-not, the bluebell, and that queen of secrecy, the violet. What strange powers hast thou as a mere shadow, but how great when in an eye thou art alive with fate. This sonnet by Keats points out that when we look about the natural world, we see the color blue all around us in aspects great and small. The ocean, the sky, or the heavens, as Keats referred to it, or a variety of flowers, birds, insects, and oh so much more. When we look internally, we can find the color blue linked to emotions like calmness, sorrow, and truth. And this in turn is reflected in language. A bluebird day, feeling blue, true blue. An 18th century superstition maintains that when a candle burns blue, a ghost is nearby. That's very likely to happen tonight, as all the stories I'll be reading involve encounters with creatures and entities that are blue. I'll be pulling these from a couple different sources, mainly Simon Young's Fairy Census and the website Your Ghost Stories. In between the tales, I will be providing a little casual analysis on the accounts and bringing up any folklore that springs to mind as it relates to what we have read. But these are all real, first-hand accounts with the supernatural, and we will be treating them as such. We have a lot to cover, so if you can spare some time for storytelling, sit back, relax, and let's get started. We're going to begin with a few experiences from Your Ghost Stories, a website where people submit their first-hand supernatural encounters. This first one took place in Maryland and was submitted by CreepyCrawler911. It's called The Little Blue Man. I recently started on a painting to hang over my bed not too long ago of a little blue fairy. My mother, when she saw what I was painting, asked me what I was working on. When I said that it was a fairy, she told me it reminded her of the tiny blue creature she had seen while she was pregnant with me, and that the only difference was that it was a male. I vaguely remembered her telling me about it, but I asked her to tell me about it again. It was little and blue. It kind of reminded me of a troll, and it just touched my pregnant belly and smiled. I did not feel like it was going to hurt me, she said, and then proceeded to tell me that it had pointy teeth. My friends and I have talked about it in length because we've all had our own paranormal experiences. We all speculate that it is more than likely one of the nice people, but we aren't exactly certain. Despite various searches, small blue creatures with pointy teeth, blue imps with pointy teeth, or even imps with pointy teeth, I have not been able to find any information on this creature. I want to say that it is an imp, not a troll, but whenever I draw one of the nice people, it always comes back to this specific design. I also see them quite erratically in my dreams, being playful and not particularly harmful, part of the reason I want to call them imps. I would love to know if anyone else has had any experiences with these creatures, or if they have any information on them. They may not seem harmful, but not knowing what they are is a little unsettling, given a very recent spike in issues with sleep paralysis. So, we don't get too much of a description of this creature. There's no mention of wings or really any features besides being blue and having pointy teeth. It isn't said if the creature was levitating or standing, but the author of the story does say in the comments that their mother thinks it was around a foot tall at most, possibly shorter. I wonder what about the creature reminded their mother of a troll. Was it the teeth? Was it something else in their physicality? Was it something about their energy? I think it's interesting how they cycle through a couple different terms in this story. They start out with fairy. Their mother said it reminded them of a troll. And then finally they settle on imp. And the reason they did this is because they said it was playful, but not harmful. So something about its nature made them want to call it an imp. I do think it's also interesting that Creepy Crawler called it one of the nice people. I thought that was interesting because the Irish have been known to call fairies the good people. And this isn't actually usually because they think fairies are good people. It's so they don't offend them. They don't want to use the word fairy in hopes that they don't conjure or call attention from the fairies. So they'll use any other name. And the good folk or the good people is one of those names. I just thought it was interesting that they use that term, the nice people, and they seem to be talking about fairies. That is the first word they brought up. Another thing is, I would bet a lot of pregnant women have paranormal encounters. I know I've come across at least one while reading the fairy census. I don't think I've read the story in a video, but just on my own reading the fairy census, I remember at least one pregnant experience. It's a very transitional state. Birth is really not so different from death, and so it's almost like the veil is thin. As a mother, you're housing someone coming into the world, so you're quite close to that veil. I would imagine that it's a pretty strange time, I can only imagine. There's an interesting comment that I'd like to read. It's from ParaHunter33. It says, "Dear Creepy Crawler, I found your story strangely intriguing myself, as I also have had a never-ending fascination and never-ending search of my own with a little blue creature or being I saw a painting of on a TV show decades ago that was in an exhibit in a unique museum supposed to be located in the Czech Republic." Ooh, that was a lot of information in one sentence. "It was of a blue creature, appearing male in my perspective. In the painting, he is hunched over and appears to be looking over his right shoulder with large open eyes at the person painting his picture. Doesn't seem to be smiling, so I'm unsure if it has pointy teeth. The word blue is in the title of the painting, the Blue Goblin, or Hobgoblin, possibly. I don't recall the specific entity name. Since I saw that particular painting on that show, the title of the show was something like Strangest Places to See. I can't recall, but it was hosted by Arthur Kent on the Travel Channel. And the museum was something along the lines of Museum of Occultism and Parapsychology, or something like that. It was included as a special exhibit of supernatural channeled artworks, and for some odd reason, the Blue Goblin painting seemed to draw my attention more than any other piece in the collection. I've searched for years and years for this painting or image, as well as that museum, and I have not ever found either one." I mostly wanted to include that comment to put this out there to see if it will ring any bells for anyone, if anyone will chime in and know the painting that this person is talking about, or the museum, or the show that they're talking about. It's all very vague details, I realize that. I tried searching all kinds of combinations of these half-remembered details they included, and I also came up with nothing, but I would really like to see this painting if anyone knows what they're talking about. It sounds really interesting, and it had quite an effect on this person, so it would be cool to track down. This story took place in Wisconsin and was submitted by Matthew7019. It's called Blue Man on Chest. I was living in Wisconsin in my parents' basement. I was 22 at the time and never really believed in ghosts before that summer night. We do live across the street from a graveyard, and my cousin who stayed with me in the basement had complained to me about the noise our house made. He would hear footsteps, doors open, and no one would be home. I attributed it to a lot of vents in the house or something like that, but one night still gives me chills. I had just fallen asleep in my basement room and awoke to the blankets being pushed around my legs. I thought it was weird, but then they felt like they were being molded around my back area. I sat up in my bed and saw nothing. I laid back down and closed my eyes, and within about 10 minutes, the blankets again were being pushed around my legs, and suddenly, I had a hard time breathing. I opened my eyes and saw a small blue man sitting on my chest, smiling at me. I could not catch my breath. I clenched my fist and threw a punch at him. As I punched him, he disappeared. My door to my room opened up quickly, and so did this larger, heavy door in the basement. At that point, I could breathe much better, but I was totally freaked out. I jumped out of bed, hit the light switch, hit the other lights in the basement, and no one was there. I ended up sleeping upstairs and never said anything to anyone, since I thought they would think I was crazy. My brother, who has played video games in the basement, has since mentioned the noise and asked me if I thought the house was haunted. Now, I will say there was one part that I kind of had a hard time picturing. They said that when they were laying down in bed, they felt like the sheets were being molded around their back. So at first I thought that meant that they were laying on their stomach, but then they said that the creature was on their chest. So maybe that means they were being molded around their sides, or maybe they started out on their stomach and then they flipped over onto their back. I'm not sure. I couldn't quite picture that part, but it's not that important. I know that blankets being moved or pulled is kind of a cliche in ghost stories as far as a movie representation would go, but if I felt something moving my blankets while I was in bed, I would probably shit myself. That would be horrifying. So this does sound like classic sleep paralysis, and by that I don't mean to be dismissive and say that that's all it was, but it's really like that classic image from Henry Fuseli's Nightmare painting of the creature hunched on the person's chest. This image has been adopted as the visual portrayal of the classic symptoms of sleep paralysis. Even though the painting is believed to be a representation of a metaphor for the sleep disorder, it is interesting that the exact scenario portrayed in the painting comes up again and again in people's reports of sleep paralysis. Seeing a little creature crouching on your chest as you're having trouble breathing and you feel a weight on your chest. I'm sure it could be reduced and explained away, but it is interesting. It is interesting. And at this point, maybe it's reinforced by this image. I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the description of this little blue man. They don't go into too much detail initially in their story, but they do elaborate more in the comments in response to a few people asking for more specifics. One person asks, "Could you better describe the blue man? Was it more human or perhaps goblin-like?" Which is a good question. After reading the story, I was picturing something similar to the Fuseli painting that I just referenced a minute ago. The stocky goblin or imp-like creature. Also, if you haven't seen the painting I'm talking about, which is called The Nightmare by Henry Fuseli, you have. Even if you don't know it by name, you've definitely seen it. But if you don't know what I'm talking about, pause for a moment and do an internet search of it so you can take a look at it. You'll recognize it as soon as you see it. Another person says, "Thank you for sharing your experience. Like the poster above, I wonder if you could give more detail on what you saw. For instance, how solid the figure was or how much detail in the features. And what exactly do you mean by small?" Luckily, Matthew, the witness, does respond. They say, "A better description of the little blue man. He seemed human. He was thin, had a long face, pointy, thin nose, and then smiled at me. He was maybe 3 feet tall. He wore a dress hat and suit, and the smile was creepy, as if he thought it was funny that I couldn't breathe. The clarity of the figure was somewhat transparent. He was looking around my room, and when he saw me, he smiled. The eyes were blank. Now comes the rest of the story that I have never told anyone. The next night, I went back to my basement room to sleep, and woke up again to the feeling of those sheets pressed to my legs, like someone was sitting on the bed next to me. I was scared, since I had heard that door open again, and yelled out to knock it off and leave. After that, I never had an issue again. I did ask my brother, and he never saw a blue man. He admitted he thinks he saw shadows, but attributed that to trees outside. But since then, no one has had any issues in the basement. It's very interesting to me that the sound of the basement door opening bookended Matthew's two different experiences. The first time, he heard the door open when the blue man disappeared and the experience ended. And the second time, he heard the door open and then felt someone sit on his bed. So creepy. It's like the entity is literally entering and exiting, but to and from where? Who knows? I've recently learned, or picked up on, since my last video, that hearing sounds at the start and or end of a supernatural experience is quite common. I don't know what that's about, but it's very interesting. Alright, so let's talk about the blue man's appearance. I was not expecting him to be wearing clothes, I'll be honest. Matthew said he was wearing a dress hat and suit. And by dress hat, I'm guessing he means a top hat. So he was like a little formally dressed blue man. That's so odd. And he was smiling. Why are they always smiling? That sinister grin. It comes up so often. It's really spooky. A couple other people leave comments about similar experiences with the feeling of the weight of something on their chest while they're sleeping. Southern TK says, my ex-husband had a similar experience, only his little man was only about a foot tall. It too was on his chest, suffocating him. It had its face close to his, like it was sucking his air from his mouth or nose. I also saw one that was about a foot tall in my kitchen on several occasions. I thought I was seeing things until a neighbor came over and freaked out when they saw it. The one I saw was black, though. I looked through Southern TK's account, and they have some pretty interesting stories, which we may have to visit one day. But they don't concern anything blue, so off we go to the next one. I think at this point we are going to pivot over to the fairy census. So, we're going to start with the first fairy census, and this took place in Somerset, England, sometime between the year 2000 and 2010, when the witness was in their 50s. One morning, I walked to the corner of my road where there is a green space, an orchard with oak trees, rowans, and hawthorns, alongside the cider apple trees. Everything is overhung with brambles and footpaths created by constant dog walking. I was passing a very large oak tree which had recently lost a dead branch. It had split away and was almost as big as the tree trunk itself. Clinging to that tree trunk was a creature about the size of a man, with a vaguely human face, webbed hands and feet, reptilian-looking, and with a damp, frog-like skin of a blue tinge. It looked wary, startled, and almost embarrassed that I had seen it. We communicated in a telepathic way. "Shouldn't you be green?" I asked. My husband had had a recent sighting of a green man. I assumed that I was seeing a similar representation. "No, blue," it replied. Because of the creature's discomfort, I continued on my way and convinced myself that I had imagined the whole encounter. It looked like Gollum in the film version of The Lord of the Rings. I gave this encounter no more thought until my next copy of Fate and Fortune magazine arrived. I still have the copy. There was a story of a young boy, disturbed in the night by a frog-like creature crying in distress. A medium was brought in who said this was a tree spirit who had recently lost its tree in a sudden and unexpected way. She successfully sent it to the spirit world, where it would wait for a new tree to grow with. I already knew that trees have a consciousness, but the existence of tree spirits who live with a tree until it gradually dies off was something I had not been aware of. If a tree is cut down without warning, it is a terrible shock to its spirit, and there is no preparation for the return to the spirit world. A tree spirit can lose its way in these circumstances and hide in the nearest house. The boy described the frog-like creature as looking like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings movie. So, I really had seen a tree spirit. I believe that the tree spirits are harmless, but are so alien-looking that they can appear scary to us with their big eyes and round faces. I believe I saw a type of nature spirit. Alright, so, first off, this being was hanging from an oak tree, and these trees do have associations with fairies. As stated in the old saying, fairy folks are in old oaks. Beatrix Potter has a story in her book, The Fairy Caravan, called The Fairy Oak, which is about a little fairy who lives in an oak who is rendered homeless when her tree is cut down. Here's a passage. There is something glorious and majestic about a fine English oak. Surely it is cruel to cut down such a very fine tree. Each dull, dead thud of the axe hurts the little green fairy that lives inside its heart. The fairy in the oak had been a harmless, timid spirit for many hundred years. Long ago, when the oak was a sapling, there had been wolves, and the dalesmen hunted them with hounds. The hunt swept through the forest. The frightened fairy leaped into the oak branches. She found the tree a place of refuge, therefore she loved it and made it her home. Because it had a guardian fairy, the oak grew tall and strong, and each of the finest trees in the forest had a fairy of its own as well. The fairy in that story is green, but the sentiment is the same. It's a resident and guardian of the oak tree. And the witness in this story believes that the strange, blue, frog-like being she saw was the same thing. She said she found a similar story of a frog-like tree spirit in a magazine called Fate and Fortune. I couldn't find the article she was talking about with simply searching these terms, and I think it'd be pretty hard to do so otherwise since I don't know what issue she was referring to, and the magazine isn't freely available online anyway. I did try and look because it looked like it would be a pretty interesting magazine to flip through. It kind of looks like a paranormal-focused Daily Mail kind of trash rag with cover lines like, "Demon doll tried to steal my husband," and "I married a vampire. It was love at first bite." So, I don't know if it's the most truth-telling resource, but the witness got something out of it. That's what's important. I was definitely struck by the description of the being, this blue, web-footed, golem-like creature. That was a pretty unique description, I thought. I hope that whatever this creature is, they get many long years to reside peacefully in their oak tree and in their forest. Let's move on to our next story. Also from the first fairy census, took place in Oxfordshire, England, between the year 2000 and 2010, when the witness was between the age of 11 and 20, and the time was between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. My experience was in a woods that me and some friends were camping in, known as Bluebell Woods, and it was very early in the morning, before it really became light. I was outside the tent when I saw many little lights, maybe like 75 to 100, peer out of what looked like a sea of bluebells. They were in full bloom at the time. It looked like fireflies, but their light was the same blue or purple shade as the bluebells. They flew around for a few minutes in the most beautiful shapes. Two of my friends poked their heads out of their tent and saw exactly what I was seeing. They, the fairies, flew around into the trees, never really coming close to us, closest maybe about 25 meters away. They started to disperse after a couple of minutes, just as it was getting lighter. Just before they fully dispersed, all that remained came into one last cluster and formed a humanoid shape that seemed to turn its head and look at us. It was only for a second before the little lights flew away into the trees and landed again into the bluebells. In the morning, when it was light, we looked for any evidence of it, but saw nothing. What an enchanting setting for such a magical experience. There are two main elements to the story that I'd like to discuss, the fairy lights and the bluebells. Let's start with the lights and get our debunking out of the way. The witness likened the lights they saw to fireflies, except that they had a purple or blue light. Let's go over some firefly facts. Fireflies, also sometimes called lightning bugs, are typically seen emitting a bioluminescent glow that is a bright green or yellow in color. The ones that I'm used to almost kind of have like a highlighter yellow color. There is a species that appears to glow whitish blue from a distance, commonly known as the blue ghost firefly, but this is only found in the southern region of the United States. England doesn't have a species of fireflies, although they do have glowworms, and they're basically the same thing. They're in the same family. Fireflies and glowworms are just different species. From what I've read, the species of glowworm found in Oxfordshire, called Lampyris noctiluca, which means night lamp in Latin, has a green color to their bioluminescent glow. Glowworm adults, which are the ones that actually glow, are present in Oxfordshire in the summer months, mainly June and July. Bluebells bloom in the spring, around April and May, so the time of year probably wouldn't align for these two organisms to be seen together. It's not impossible, but there'd be a very small window for that to happen. Glowworms burrow underground during the day, so that would be an explanation for the witnesses not finding evidence of them upon the arrival of dawn, if this occurred at a time when both glowworms and bluebells were present at the same time, which, like I said, there could be a small chance of that happening in May, as glowworm larvae could potentially reach maturity as early as May, but either way, they shouldn't, to my understanding, have that blue or violet colored light that the witness described seeing. So, let's move on to the bluebells. I have a personal affinity for bluebells. I always go and seek them out when they're in bloom in spring. Because to see a forest completely carpeted with bluebells is such a magical sight. So it's no wonder that these flowers have so many associations with fairies. The bluebells that I have near me and the bluebells found in England share the common name of bluebell, and they are both found in woodlands, but they're totally different species. They're even in different families, and the ones I have are actually really more trumpet-shaped. The English bluebells are in the hyacinth genus and really do look like little bells. Some other common names for them are fairy flowers, witch's thimbles, crow's toes, and cuckoo's boots. Now, common names are very fun, but they can be a little confusing as, like I said, two flowers called bluebells can be in completely different scientific families. But for the sake of brevity and convenience, I will be calling the flowers that we're talking about from this story bluebells and not Hyacinthoides nonscripta, which is their scientific name. So let's talk about some of the folklore surrounding these bluebells. Walking amongst bluebells in twilight or after dark could risk you being pixie-led, intoxicated by their fragrance and beauty. You're left to wander the woods until you're lost, and touching them can lead to a variety of dire consequences. You could invite the wrath of the fairies, who are said to hang their spells on the flowers. A child who picks a bluebell could be abducted by the fairies, never to be seen again. Since bluebells contain toxic sap and even touching them can cause skin irritation, it does make you wonder if the folk associations with the flowers were used as a deterrent for handling them. Although they did have a variety of uses in the past, like as an adhesive and a pest repellent. The flowers, as I said earlier, and as their common name implies, look like little bells, and it is said that fairies ring them to call one another for gatherings. However, these ethereal tollings are supposed to be inaudible to the human ear, and if you do chance to hear the chiming of the bluebells, it's believed to foretell your death, bringing about yet another common name for this flower, dead man's bells. So all the bluebell fairy lore I recited just now are the common, accepted, repeated myths now in circulation on any website you'll find on bluebells and their folklore associations. But I was finding that it was difficult to find historical print references. And it seems like it might be because a lot of these superstitions are actually recorded as being tied to yet another flower, commonly called bluebell or harebell, Campanula rotundifolia. I won't go into all of that here and now, but I'm including some links in my source list to two very informative articles on these flower superstitions on the Hypnagoria blog. They were really, really interesting, helpful articles. So if you're interested in that topic, seek out those two links in my source list if you want to set the record straight on your bluebell folklore. But I'm sure you may be feeling like I just pixie led you down the bluebell path after all that rambling on flower taxonomy and superstitious sources. I definitely feel that way myself. But regardless of all the information I just spouted, our young witness from Oxfordshire saw fairies, glowing blue fairies amongst a blanket of bluebells who made these murmurations that shaped themselves into human form that turned and looked at them. What an unforgettably enchanting experience. I highly encourage the experience of seeing a bluebell wood in full bloom if you haven't. If you live in the UK, the National Trust website actually has a map you can pull up that lists bluebell woods, and the Woodland Trust website has a page for Scotland. These links will also be included in my source list if you need it. The presence of bluebells indicate ancient woodland, which is a term meaning that the forest in which they reside has existed continuously for over 400 years. So, what better place to find fairies than an ancient wood? Next, we will be moving on to the second fairy census, which was released earlier this year in 2024. This one took place in Texas, and it was between 9 p.m. and 12 a.m. I saw something when I was 14, but I was never sure what it was or how to classify it. Nevertheless, here is the story. It was about the year 1984. I was 14 and my best friend was 12. I was spending the night at her house, and we were very bored. I noticed the house beside theirs had these very large windows and no curtains. It was one of those old white farmhouses. It was dark outside, and I told her it would be funny to spy on her neighbors. There were two sisters that lived there, and one was also a friend to my friend. With the lights off in our bedroom, we could easily see into the sisters' bedroom. They were in their nightgowns just meandering around the room, getting ready for bed, I suppose. We thought we were so funny when the smirks got wiped off our faces. A bright, glowing neon blue, very tall, very slender, female profile appeared and walked right across the room and into the wall. She looked as though she was confidently going somewhere. She then disappeared. I said, "Did you see that?" Now, honestly, I believed at that point in time that somehow I had imagined it, and had my friend said no, I would have long forgotten this incident. But my friend said yes. She saw what I saw, so I know it was as real could be. Also, the girls in the room were never aware of what happened. My friend asked one of the girls at school about it, and her reply was, "No, you're scaring me." Also, the being did not know it had been seen, as far as I could tell. At 14, and only knowing Christian beliefs at the time, I believed that God had played a trick on us to punish us for spying. To say the least, we never spied again. But now I believe we saw a portal. What was she? Are there any fae who glow blue? I love to read folklore stories, but this incident happened long before I was a regular reader. It could have been something else besides a fairy, but I think they are all sometimes the same thing. I believe fairies are beings from inner space. Well, you certainly don't expect to see that when spying on your neighbors. They asked if there are any fairies who glow blue, and I don't know of any offhand that glow blue as a standard, unless we're talking about little will-o'-the-wisp things like the ones that were experienced in the bluebell woods. When I was poking around the Paranormal Database, which is a UK-based website where anyone can submit a report of a haunting or a fairy, basically something paranormal. It could be a historical account or it can be a personal account. So I was perusing on there. Whenever I find whenever I read a UK story, I always go check the page for that location on the paranormal database. So I did find a couple entries that bear some similarities to this account. Not that that connects them, but I just found them interesting. I'll read them for you. One entry from the Isle of Man, reported to have taken place in Castletown in autumn of 1957, says, Alastair Alfin MacGregor wrote that a smoky female apparition appeared to the owner of this cottage. The entity was blue-gray in color and watched the owner before disappearing through a wall. Now, Alastair Alfin MacGregor was a Scottish writer who published several books on folklore and collected local accounts of ghostly sightings. I looked through the titles that were available for free online, and I couldn't find anything about this entry on the paranormal database about the Blue Lady. The paranormal database, even though I love it, it isn't the most sourceable website, but it is so much fun to look through. I did find quite a few entries regarding blue women, but these are generally about ghosts or apparitions of women wearing blue. But I did find another true blue woman. This one was also in Wales, said to have taken place in a wooded area in the town of Monmouth sometime in the early 20th century. Two young people in a group of three out after midnight spotted a blue, hazy, faceless woman in a flowing dress. The figure glided along before vanishing like smoke. I noticed that both of these ghostly blue Welsh ladies had a smoky quality, which I thought was very interesting. Before I move on from the paranormal database, I want to read one more quick entry from Nottinghamshire, England, in a place called Scrata Wood. The woodland is said to be home to dancing blue lights that emerge once the sun has set. It is not clear what these lights are locally thought to be. And that reminded me of our bluebell story from earlier, don't you think? So, I had to read that one. So the next one I'm going to read is quite long, but I think you'll find it's well worth it. It took place in Australia in the 1990s, when the witness was between the ages of 11 and 20. I was probably just a month or two shy of 15 at the time this happened. It was the summer school holidays, and I was visiting my grandparents at their 75-acre farm by the river on the mid-north coast of New South Wales, about a four-hour drive south of where my family and I were living at the time. The land was mainly cleared, as my grandparents ran dairy cattle and had a market garden, but there were pockets of eucalypt here and there, and two old china pear trees where the old farmhouse once stood. My Nana was an avid gardener and grew a cottage garden around the new farmhouse, built in the 1930s, which she tended to when she wasn't helping with the farm work or running around after the grandkids. She was also a conservationist, and when her youngest child of six, my aunt, died of a rare cancer at the age of 22 in 1986, my Nana set aside an acre and began to plant a forest of trees native to the area in her honor. That acre is a full-grown forest today. About 50 meters behind the house was a large thicket of bush, probably about 30 meters by 10 meters, which, as a small kid, freaked me out. I was sure something big and hairy and not cow-related lived in there, and so I'd wander all over the farm, but I'd steer well clear of the thicket. By this time, I was well aware of Yowies, Australian Bigfoot, and although they were in my dreams often, I don't recall seeing one by that stage in my life. We had lived in the state forest at one point, and a friend of the family who had lived in the highlands of Papua New Guinea and had encounters there had told my parents to be mindful of letting my brother and I play in the bush unattended. I never understood why my Nana and Pop never cleared this thicket, though. Still, for my entire life, I had always felt a presence on that land, centered in that thicket, although I couldn't articulate what it was. When I was much older, I did go exploring in there, and only managed to find a satin bowerbird's nest. These Australian native birds are famous for their proclivity for acquiring blue objects, which the males fill their nests with in order to attract their mate, including numerous plastic blue clothes pegs, stolen no doubt from my Nana's clothesline. The particular night this happened, everyone had gone to bed, and I had also drifted off to sleep. I remember waking up to the sound of a low, consistent hum coming from outside in the yard. The house was in darkness, and I could hear the gentle snores of the more nocturnally vocal members of my family coming from the other bedrooms. And my younger brother was sleeping soundly in the bed next to mine. But this hum, this deep and reverberating purr, caught my attention. At first, I thought it was the old refrigerator on the veranda singing its tired, ancient song. But I soon realized that this hum I was hearing was coming up from the earth itself. I could feel it vibrating throughout my whole body. It was a hot and sticky midsummer night, so we all just slept with a light cotton top sheet covering us. Yet the sound felt ominous to me, so I pulled my sheet and blanket up over my head. Sweating like anything, I lay there under the covers, with all of my senses on high alert, but willing myself to go back to sleep. Well, I couldn't sleep now, particularly then, as I heard the front door open. And then I heard the screen door open. At the front of the house was a bathroom with a toilet and shower that had been added on when my aunt got sick. Previous to that, the toilet and shower were in the laundry slash outhouse about 20 meters up the garden path. The new addition was built as an enclosed porch. To enter the house, you came in through the screen door, which usually got locked at night, and the door to the new bathroom was on the left, a wall with a window in it to the right, and then you came through the front door, which never got locked. I hope that makes sense. Well, I heard the front door open, and then the screen door, as if someone was going out, but I didn't hear anyone moving about inside or walking to the front door to go out. Wasn't until after I heard the screen door open, then I heard the footfall of someone coming inside the house. I remember thinking that was really weird, so I very gingerly poked my head out from under the covers. The bedroom that my brother and I slept in was in the middle of the house. An enclosed veranda ran along two sides, so we had the main bedroom door, which opened onto the lounge room, and a sliding door, which we left open, and a window that looked out into the veranda. This is the veranda you step into when you come in the front door. Farmhouses were built with some odd designs back in the day, although I suspect this one just kept being added onto with each generation. I suspect it probably only began as a two-room cottage. Anyway, when I poked my head out from under the covers and looked out the window, I could see a soft green glow outside. It wasn't moonlight or some other lights, just a strange, eerie, soft glow coming out of the ground, illuminating the garden as if there were millions of glowworms out there. This, along with the hum and the weird sounds of someone either coming into or leaving the house, were a bit much for me. And I threw the covers back over my head and willed myself with all my might to go back to sleep. I guess I did. The next thing I remember was hearing my family in the kitchen having breakfast. I got up, feeling very groggy and foggy and a bit disoriented, and went out to join them. I asked if anyone had gotten up during the night to go outside. No one had. My mom asked me if I had been chewing on a pen. I said, no, I just woke up. Why? She told me that I had a small blue dot on my bottom lip, and also one on my chin. That's weird, I thought. She then started brushing my hair to braid it, and asked me again, are you sure you haven't been playing with ink? Again, I said no, I'd just woken up. And anyway, where would I get ink from? I did like to draw, and had brought some art supplies with me, but I only ever used pencil. My hair was long, down to my hips, and my mom held up the bottom end and said, look, the bottom 3 inches of your hair has blue strands running through it. You'd better go wash it out. My mom and my Nana thought I or some of my cousins were playing a joke, but there was no bottles of blue ink or blue pens or any ink stains on my pillow or my clothes or anywhere else, and I couldn't wash the blue out of my hair or off my face. Mom ended up cutting that part of my hair. The blue dot on my lip has, however, remained. The one on my chin is still there, but has faded a little. To this day, no one knows how they got there or what happened during that night. I do remember one dream of that night, where 3 very tall, luminescent beings were standing next to my bed. I called them elves. They seemed to me to come out of the earth rather than outer space. I don't recall any other details, except they look like those Australian indigenous rock art paintings of spirit beings. I only saw these beings in my dream, of which I've always had many, and have also experienced long-term sleep paralysis and other supernatural experiences. But I have a strong sense that what I saw in my dreams was a memory from that night. The beings were very tall and luminous. Members of my family have had other experiences there, and someone once told me that there had been an Aboriginal presence on that land. To me, fairies are the other, interdimensional beings, neither inherently good nor bad. I often get asked about the blue dot on my lip and what its significance is or why I chose to get a tattoo there. With most people who ask or comment, I'm very reluctant to tell them the real origin of its appearance, but it does trigger an emotional response. I feel a bit on the fringe of things as it is, so it's nice to be able to share my experience without judgment. So, thank you for providing this platform. I just love that story. So magical and whimsical and strange. Firstly, the witness's grandmother sounds awesome. Planting a whole forest of native trees for her daughter, so cool. And her house sounds like a fantastic place to go spend summer holidays with lots of nature around. Even though, as the witness said, she was quite scared of the thickets behind the house. And she said that she felt something that she couldn't quite identify what it was, but that just kind of gave her the creeps. Dark, dense, untamed areas of nature trigger a subconscious fear of the unknown, and they can represent the darker, unexplored parts of our psyche. I think a lot of people these days also find themselves feeling like they're in alien territory when they are present in a forest. Probably a result of so much urbanization and the loss of so much wild land. And people are so busy they don't get to spend a lot of time in nature anymore. But of course, the witness was a child at the time, so she could have felt an instinctive threat to safety at the thought of a deep, dark wood, which would be understandable. But she also said that she sensed something big, hairy, and inhuman dwelled within that thicket. They also mentioned that she didn't understand why her grandparents didn't clear the thicket, and it brought to mind to me fairy forts or fairy raths, which are these areas in Irish fields that are the remnants of ring forts or some ancient circular dwelling, and trees and shrubs have just been left to grow wild in these large circular patches on rural land. And the folk belief maintains that you should never tamper or interfere with these fairy forts because, well, they belong to the fairies. And to cut them down, even a single tree would unleash the wrath of the fairies and have some dire consequences for anyone who did so. So, maybe the witness's grandparents knew something about this thicket and chose to leave it be for that reason. When she did eventually explore the thicket, she came across a satin bowerbird's nest, and these, like so many animals in Australia, are just fascinating creatures. They get their common name from the nests the male bowerbirds craft, which look like little archways or little doorways made from dried sticks. They build these two parallel walls of sticks that kind of lean together at the top and form a little doorway in the middle. And that in itself is quite amazing to look at. But what makes them even more fascinating is the way they decorate them. The female bowerbirds are very choosy when it comes to picking a mate, so the males have to go to great lengths to impress them. They do this not only by meticulously maintaining these bower nests, but also decorating the area around the nest with blue objects that they find or steal around the environment. The Australian Museum's website says, "Blue clothes pegs, drinking straws, and bottle tops are among the favorite stolen items, while bright blue parrot feathers, flowers, and brown snail shells make up the majority of decorations away from human habitation." So the males take these items and they carefully arrange them around the nest. And when a female bowerbird visits the nest, he goes into this wild dance in one last gesture to win her affection. I highly recommend looking at a video of this mating dance. It's pretty fabulous. Also, look up a picture, just type up satin bowerbird nest, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. As to why the satin bowerbirds have an affinity for the color blue, it isn't exactly known, but some theorize that the color is easiest for them to see, or it's done purposefully to complement the bowerbird's physical features. The male bowerbird has this beautiful, glossy, blue-black coat of feathers, which it actually only achieves after 7 years. It looks identical to the female bowerbird before that point. They also, both sexes, have striking purple irises. The blue objects maybe could be chosen to bring out these colors in their physical features, but it's not exactly known why they choose blue objects most of the time. So, the night after our witness decides to explore the thicket and comes across the beautiful blue bowerbird nest, they have these strange and intense experiences of hearing doors opening in the house, just like what happened in an earlier story, right? And they see glowing green coming from the garden outside, coming from the ground, and they hear a low, vibrating, humming sound. And then, the next morning, her mother points out that she has a blue dot on her mouth, her chin, and blue strands on the tips of her hair. No idea where they've come from, and with some of these bizarre stains still present 30 years later on her body. Now, what this means, I have no idea. Whether it has any connection to the thickets, or the blue bowerbird nest, or the tall, luminous elves that visited her dreams that night, I don't know. But what an incredible story. So strange, so magical. I loved every part of that. Also, quickly about the tall, luminous elves. She mentioned that they kind of reminded her of some Aboriginal cave paintings or rock art paintings. And just doing a quick search of Australian rock art paintings, it seems like she might be talking about these specific paintings, rock paintings, that have a variety of names. It seems the Guian Guian rock paintings, the Bradshaw rock paintings, the Kimberley rock paintings, but they do depict these really tall, elongated figures. I mean, they're really striking just to look at. I did start to read about them. I didn't dive too deep into it yet, so I don't have a ton of information, although something that was interesting about them that I remember reading is that they have maintained their pigment so well after all these years, and they're not sure exactly when they're from. They think maybe 12,000 years ago, but they've maintained their pigment and they stand out so well because at some point a fungus developed over whatever they had used to paint the original pictures, and then a bacteria formed that was symbiotic with this fungus. Basically, it formed this new pigment, this symbiotic relationship of this fungus growing over this pigment. Or maybe it was the bacteria that came first. Anyway, there's a symbiotic relationship with fungus and bacteria that has caused this new pigmentation that has retained the images for all this time. And that's another reason why it's kind of hard to date them, is because the actual material used to paint them is gone. It's been eaten away by fungus and bacteria at this point. I have a huge interest in fungus and mycology, so that was where I got caught up in. So if you have an interest in that in ancient rock art, definitely look into that. So many amazing things to that story, and I think it's a fabulous way to go out for the night. So thank you so much for tuning in to hear these encounters of blue fairies and flowers, birds and imps and other odd things. I hope you enjoyed it. As always, I must mention that if you have had an experience where you believe you encountered a fairy, please consider submitting it anonymously to the Fairy Census, which is currently gathering entries for the next census. I will have a link to do so in the description of the video. And then a couple of recommendations before we part, if you need more blue beings in your life. The Modern Fairy Sightings podcast has an excellent episode where they interview an artist named Jason Atomic, who had a really, really interesting encounter with a blue being, as well as many other fascinating stories. Can't recommend it enough, so if you search Modern Fairy Sightings podcast blue on either YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts, you should find it. It's episode 83. And then I do have another video about encounters with green beings. So if you search Goblin Queen Green or Little Green Men on my channel, it should come up, but I might put a link to the video in a pinned comment. I've also gone ahead and made a playlist of all the audio-only uploads, if that's helpful to anyone, because at this point, I switch off between doing a shorter, fully edited video and a longer audio-only upload. So I'm going to make a playlist, or I have made a playlist, that's called audio-only/podcast uploads, if that's of interest or helpful to anyone. Anyways, as displayed in the sonnet by Keats I read in the beginning, blue is all around us, above us, below us, within us. All you need to do is step outside and look about the natural world to experience the color blue. And in doing so, you may come across something supernatural. I'll see you next time. Good night.